Welcome to the 2-4, a Monday night, Zach Vanoss, Sean O'Neill. We're doing this immediately after the Montreal Canadiens have lost for the fifth time this season to the Tampa Bay Lightning. Swept in the season, not great, right, Sean?
No, not fantastic. I mean, I don't know if would a win have made a big difference, you know, 5-0, 4-1, but I think it kind of would have. If you go into the playoffs with a nice 4-2 win, getting swept decisively.
Pretty decisively. We'll get into Habs and Bolts in the 12-pack coming up in a minute. Before we do that, there were other games. Let's not focus completely on one game, although, as we said on the last podcast, this was the game we were all focused on, really.
I mean, to the extent this is way much more information than anyone needs to know, but we were going to do this before the game, and then we said, you know what, let's just hold off, because this is sort of the biggest game for the rest of the season, so let's hold off and see how it goes. And, yeah, again, the answer, not great.
I like this new segment, more information than anyone needs to know.
It'll be reoccurring, don't worry.
It's a lot of people's social media feeds, really. It's just the general theme there.
Very true.
Before we get into the 12-pack, we got to mention RabbitHabs.com, one of our big supporters, and we could check out last week's forum in which we discussed the most underrated Hab. Andrei Markov seemed to be the consensus amongst our panelists. What do you think, Sean? Andrei Markov?
Yeah, I'd go with actually Plekanec or Gallagher, but Markov, I understand the argument for Markov to the point where he's been so good for so long that we kind of underappreciate his genius at this point.
And I said it was Plex last week on the podcast, but then I switched my mind by the arguments made in the forum there. And tomorrow you'll be able to find at rabbithabs.com as well as the montrealbias.com a new edition of the forum discussing who we think is the best first round opponent the Habs could get. A lot of good discussion on that, so that'll be up on Tuesday, much like this podcast that you are listening to right now. So it's probably there as we speak. Since we last cast, not a stellar mark by the Canadians, 2-2-1. It doesn't leaves a little bit to be desired. Let's say doesn't knock your socks off. Nothing all that impressive. Going back more than a week now, a 2-1 win over the San Jose Sharks, so we like that one. 3-2 overtime loss to the Nashville Preds on Tuesday of this week. A Thursday night 5-2 loss to the Winnipeg Jets in a game that the Habs actually played much better than the Jets, but Dustin Tokarski and Pavlich seemed to be the difference in that one. 3-2 overtime win over the weekend against the Florida Panthers, in which Max Pacioretty scored the game winner with his 36th of the season. And while he got number 37 against Tampa Bay, it was a loss. The Habs came back, as they did the previous game, but when all was said and done, it was Tampa Bay once more as we set off the top 5-3 using an empty netter to get that two-goal advantage on the Canadiens. That leads directly into the 12-pack, Sean. Number one, do we know anything more about Habs Bolts now than we did, say, a week ago when they lost in very similar fashion?
I mean, not really, because a week ago I thought Tampa Bay was a slightly better team that seems to have our number, and obviously nothing has happened since that would dissuade me. Like I said, a win would have been nice. I guess this just reinforces the fact that Tampa, I guess you can argue about the fact whether they're a better team or not, I guess. But there's no real arguing the fact that they have our number, that they, for whatever reason, whether, you know, it's like the boxing matchup thing where just certain fighters seem to have the advantage. Tampa Bay really seems to have Montreal's ticket.
Question we asked in the top spot in the 12-pack last week, I believe, was can they beat the Bolts? I doubt a loss tonight did anything to change your mind.
No, I mean, I'm sure, I haven't looked it up, I'm sure there are situations where a team has swept another team in the regular season and gone on to lose to them in the playoffs.
I bet that's happened with some regularity, to be honest with you.
Yeah, so it's not, you know, is it inconceivable that Carey Price could win 4 out of 7 games against Ben Bishop? Nope. But, yeah, I don't feel any more confident than I did a week ago.
No, certainly didn't instill any confidence. Lightning are a deep and talented team, but I think you had to beat them tonight. They're suffering from some injuries. Montreal had, you know, pretty much 100% health, actually. Not even pretty much. They are at 100% health, right? Yeah. Completely healthy. You had to, I think, in your own building, take care of business tonight. And, I, you know, when I say had to, I don't mean if without winning tonight they can't beat the Bolts in the playoffs or anything like that. But I think you would have done yourself a big favor by putting your foot down, and a convincing win, or at least a mildly convincing win, would have been nice. A loss that had its moments, it doesn't do a lot for me. When all's said and done, there, I don't think there was a game this season. No, I know for a fact there wasn't a game this season in which I thought the Habs should have beat the Lightning. They've had moments, they fought hard. They've given reason in the last 2 games they've played the Lightning for us to go, okay, maybe they got some fight in them. But not once in all the losses to the Lightning this season have I thought, you know, it was an unjustified loss. The Bolts have straight up been a better team every game.
Yeah, that's the thing. We had their moments tonight, sure, I guess. But Tampa Bay was not only a better team, but a substantially better team.
Substantially better, I think.
And the possession numbers really bear that out to almost a scary extent.
Montreal got off to a good start, but a couple penalties, they found themselves stuck in their own zone, and the rest of the night you could kind of see the way it was going. Let's just say I don't want to face the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs.
Speaking of which, maybe, number two, who is the best dark horse for the Cup?
I don't think, speaking of, I don't think that segue works, because I don't really think the Tampa Bay Lightning are a dark horse for the Cup. Yeah. Unless you're considering any team in the East a dark horse, but I think that's a little unfair this season. I'm going to go with the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, I think that's probably the obvious dark horse at this point. They've played some of the best hockey of anybody in the league over the past couple months. The question that we raised last week, and I still think is a huge question mark surrounding Minnesota Wild, is can Devan Dubnyk keep it going? But so far, so good. And even if he falls back to earth, you know, somewhat, to become a just a decent goalie instead of playing out of his mind as of late, Minnesota Wild, as a team, are playing some of the best hockey out there. So even if Dubnyk is human again, the Wild still present a big, big challenge for whoever's going to come up against them. So I think it's kind of an easy pick right now, considering the way they're playing. But just looking at the positioning, although they might finish ahead of the Blackhawks, so even that's almost a moot point at this point, I would say that's my dark horse, but I think you could make an argument that that's not that dark of a dark horse right now.
That'd be my answer, too. I mean, you know, really, don't you get the sense that anyone who's not LA or Chicago is a sort of a dark horse?
Yeah, exactly. I would say so.
Despite the fact that LA has fewer points than Winnipeg right now.
Yeah, that'd be a fun dark horse, but I don't see that being the case.
Minnesota's my answer as well, because they're playing really, really good hockey. I guess, you know, for the sake of argument variety, I guess the other team I could go with, you could make the argument for St. Louis, I guess.
I think they're almost a favorite. I would put them in the LA-Chicago category.
Exactly. If you want to go dark horse-ish, I can make an argument for Nashville.
I suppose I could hear that. Here's a deep, dark, you know, second dark best horse.
On the planet, maybe.
Yeah.
A great defensive core. A pretty sneaky, decent offensive team, though they've added some pieces. 102 points on the season, not for nothing. They're leading the division.
So does that make them a dark horse? I mean
it kind of does.
Yeah.
Who out there is picking Nashville to win the cup?
Nobody.
Even get out of the Central Division.
I'm going to go with the darkest horse of all. The Boston Bruins.
Yeah, fair enough.
Sneak in, Tuukka Rask gets hot. I mean, I wouldn't put any money on the Bruins right now. But, you know, if they come in the first round, suddenly look like the Bruins of old and flick a switch. They do have to flick a switch, and at a switch that they've struggled to find. They won a couple over the weekend, a couple really big games. But I've watched a lot of Bruins hockey over the past couple weeks simply because I want them to lose. And it's kind of fun to watch. And more often than not, they've actually struggled. I mean, they barely escaped Carolina the other night in a must-win. They got the win. But they haven't. The killer instinct is still lacking from the Bees right now. So that would be a very dark horse. But, I mean, you still got those players. You still got Bergeron. You still got Rask. You still got Chara. If Marchand and Lucic were to turn it on and be a stronger secondary scoring, and Marchand's been doing that as of late, actually. Marchand, as I'm supposed to say. Ugh, can't even say his name like that. Makes me sick. I mean, but they have to make the playoffs first.
Yeah, that's step one to being a dark horse.
It really is. We break it down for you here on this one.
The other team that I have a sneaking suspicion that Washington might do something this year.
I could see that. I could see that.
Washington has 49 goals, by the way.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That this, you know, with the way that the NHL is now, how difficult it is. I mean, we're in a pretty dead era of scoring. 49's insane.
A really quiet 49 too. That's about to hit 50 yet again.
Yeah. And so when did you really start paying attention to that?
Yeah, I know. I could see that, you know, maybe this is the year the Caps make a bit of a run. Because I do think this is the best coach they've ever had.
Ovechkin's got 49. Rick Nash is 9 behind him, as is Stamkos. Yeah. And then it's Pacioretty and Pavelski with 36.
Yeah.
I mean, the fourth place guys are like 13 goals behind him. That's insane. Well, 37 tonight for Pacioretty, putting him in fourth alone. So,
I mean, he should probably be in the Hart Trophy conversation, and he's not at all.
I would agree with that. I think I'd have him in there. How could you not?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's dominant. That's almost as arguably dominant as Price is being.
Yeah, and no one's even whispering about him.
I've whispered.
Well,
I whispered all day. Ovechkin. Number three, who's going to win the President's Trophy?
Well, I'll go with, you know, the Ducks are in the pole position right now, and they have been for most of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Neither of us mentioned them, because I don't think they're a cup. I guess it's kind of weird to say they're not a cup contender at all, but I have a hard time seeing that team coming out of the West.
105 points.
I know.
I agree with you, but 105 points. No, yeah, I don't see them.
I really don't see them coming out of the West, but I think they are the front runner for the President's Trophy.
Which would make sense.
Yeah.
You think they're the front runner or they lead the league? Well, that's bold. Yeah, well, what a statement.
Analysis.
What are you going to do? For the sake of being different, I'm going to go ahead and take Nashville on this one. It will not be your Montreal Canadiens. I think I'm a little concerned they may stumble into the playoffs, which I wouldn't even necessarily. I mean, you want them to finish well, but I wouldn't panic if that happens either. So I'll say Nashville to keep things interesting, but yeah, I think Anaheim's a pretty good pick. They pick up points regularly. And you don't really ever seem to notice them. And they don't scare you that much. I mean, any night the Ducks are coming into town, even though they've got more wins than anyone else in the NHL. I don't think there's very, you know, any playoff team, at least, I think, thinks they can beat the Ducks.
Yeah, it's funny, because for so long they were a team that wasn't making the playoffs, and you'd look at the roster and say, what the hell is going on? This should be a much better team than they are, and they finally clicked, but I still don't look at them and see a cup team. They've got, you know, two of the 10 best forwards in the league. Their defensive core is nice. They've got some nice secondary scoring. Their goaltending's pretty good. Like, they kind of have all the pieces there, but...
So what don't we like about the Ducks?
I mean, they do seem to the possession stats would indicate they're another one of those paper tiger teams.
Yeah. I guess that's what not to like about the pre-advanced stats, or just more stats, as I like to call them at this point. Would we really be counting out the Ducks? Or is this is a team... I think we'd be talking about the Ducks as a powerhouse.
We'd be 105 points, Getzlaff and Perry.
Solid, solid net minding.
Yeah, what else do you want, really? But, you know, they're... I mean, put it this way, they have 105 points, and their goal differential in the season is plus 11.
That's fair. That's an interesting stat. So I guess even before advanced stats, we'd be looking Ottawa at that territory. Plus. That is Ottawa territory. And you don't think Ottawa's a very good team.
I don't think they're a fun story, but I don't think they're a very good team.
Takes us naturally into number four. Is the run over?
It's kind of starting to feel that way, isn't it?
I think so. I think the night...
The Toronto loss was the... I think that kind of meant that was kind of the end of the run right there.
Hamburger got pulled against New York.
Yeah.
You started to wonder there. And then you blow that 3-1 lead to the Leafs of all teams, too. That hurts. And the Bruins kind of got their mojo a little over the weekend with a couple wins.
Yeah.
I think the dance is over for the Senators.
Yeah, lost 3 in a row. I think so, too. A little bit too too late.
Hey, it was fun for them, not for me.
It was fun for them. For Toronto to be the team that stuck the dagger in them really has to hurt for that franchise.
As bad as Toronto is right now, too.
As bad as Toronto is, and as many times as Toronto has sort of ruined Ottawa's party.
Really the only team in the NHL who Toronto's ruined the party for on the regular.
Yep. In the last 60 years or something.
Well, I mean, you know, since we've had color photographs. And,
yes, since women have had the right to vote.
Let's not get into politics here. It's not that kind of podcast. No, I think it's over for them. Well, and it's like you put it on last week's podcast. They're not a very good team, really. When you really look at it, they're not a great team. They got hot. They went on a fun run. They had a miracle story from a goalie who probably, this is probably unfair, he's played very well since he came in, but it really seemed like he had no business being in the NHL. Luck, I guess, and who the hell else knows? One of those things that's actually really fun about sports. But they do run out. You can't keep going on the way Otto... I mean, even if Hammond had kept it up, Ottawa couldn't keep scoring at the rate they were. So they were doing everything right. Every break was going their way. It was bound to come to an end. And now it feels like it has. I mean, they're only 1 point out of this thing, really.
Yeah, they could... Yeah, mathematically, you know, they could easily get back in. But it does kind of feel like they're running out of steam here.
We'll see what happens. It would make sense that the Bruins just end up in the playoffs. Kind of by sheer luck, by the fact that nobody really pushed them. Ottawa made its appearance, but there was no 9-10-11 battle like we've seen previously. How many weeks have we been talking about really the 8 in the East seems set? Yeah. It took a miracle against all odds run from Ottawa to make that seem shaky, but even that wound up standing up. I think. I mean, the season's not over. I'm already writing off the Senators, obviously, but I think it's over for them.
Yeah, I mean, Florida's still back in the mix, too, but... It seems like a little bit too late for them as well.
You start running out of ground. I mean, they're down to 5-6 games left on the season. A lot of 3-point games out there. It's just too hard to make up that kind of ground with that few games left. The Bruins are going to be playing for every point. You got to expect they're going to send at least a couple into overtime between now and the end of the season. Unless the Bruins really shit the bed, they're in the driver's seat, and I don't see them falling out.
Yeah,
I'd like to. But I'd also like to see Ottawa miss. I'm happy either way, and miserable either way, because one of them makes it in. Two of my most three hated teams. Luckily, the Leafs are the Leafs.
Yeah, I don't think they're making a late push.
The Leafs?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
I think we can count them out.
I think that's safe.
I suppose that brings us to number five. Montreal earned its first back-to-back 100-point season since the early 1980s. Do you give Terry any credit for this accomplishment?
Well, the way the question's worded, do I give him... I give him some credit. It'd be ridiculous not to give him a little bit of credit. He's been the coach for the first 200-point seasons, I'd say, since the early 80s. But I don't give him a ton of credit. Still too much that I get frustrated with. from Michel Therrien. Just thinking to tonight. Tonight, 9 seconds of power play time for Lars Eller when he was really the most effective forward out there for the Canadiens, especially in the first period. He looked like he was playing out of his mind.
Yeah, he was good.
There's little things now and then, and it's mostly his rigidity and his unwillingness to shift from the game plan a little. Tonight might have been a night in which you shift from the game plan or trying to find a way to win. Give Lars Eller, who I agree probably based on points, and I'm a bit more of a defender of Lars Eller than you are, and a lot of people are, but tonight would have been a nice night to give Lars Eller a little power play time the way he played in the first, especially in the first period, but he had a really good game overall. And it's always little things like that that just drive me nuts with Michel Therrien. And so I can't give him full credit. I think that it's a good team. I still believe it's a really good team being somewhat hampered by Therrien rather than helped. But I do think the defensive makeup of this team at this moment, the way they play in front of Price, that's Therrien's system. And guess what? He has a goalie having an amazing season. He's got the team to do the right things in front of that goalie to win more nights than not. We'll see what happens with that in the playoffs. I give him credit for implementing a system that works with a goalie out of this world. But is he lifting the Habs to someplace some other player, some other coach might not have them? I don't think so. I still don't think so.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, back-to-back 100-point seasons.
I know, it's hard to argue.
And really, really 3 straight 100-point seasons, really.
Yeah, you're right.
That's pretty damn impressive. And I am getting to the point where I wonder if a little bit of the criticism of Therrien has become overstated, because that's a pretty damn impressive track record. But
well,
I do.
When do you? I mean, at some point we have to hit the tipping point. Is it a Stanley Cup?
It really seems like that's the only thing, right, at this point.
And that almost seems unfair.
Yes, it does.
I'm arguing against myself. I fully realize that.
No,
everybody.
No, but it's tough because the numbers suggest he's not a great coach. You know, the way I look at team composition and strategy suggests he's not a great coach. And I think you, to a certain extent, have to judge coaches on process and not results. Yeah. But the results are pretty impressive.
The results are very impressive.
It's getting harder and harder to argue against it. Even if it's largely because of his goalie, even if it's largely, you know, not his doing. 3 straight 100-point seasons is 3 straight 100-point seasons.
I agree. As much as he bothers me, as much as the things he does frustrate me as a fan.
Yeah.
It has been 3 really good seasons in a row in Montreal now.
Taking over a team that had the third worst record in the league.
Yeah, that's a very good. I mean, it's not like he took over.
That was a fluky year, but
yeah.
Still.
He still took over a team that was an absolute tire fire. I mean, that was a horrible season. There's no reason to believe that team had to figure its shit out. But they did under him quite well and have continued to win at an extremely high rate since then. Question number 6. Have the Habs found their 6th defenseman in Greg Pattern?
He looks really good, doesn't he?
Well, other than one painful mistake this evening, which he's a rookie defenseman. I think they all make one of those. Josh Georges made plenty of those in his early days.
Yes, he did. He really did. That's a pretty good comparison.
I think he's a Josh Georges-esque player. I think he...
Which would be fantastic.
Yeah, and even if he's not, I think he's, as you say, he's the 6th defenseman. I think he... And Bergevin said this the other night on Nancy Champ. He's very comfortable with Pattern being the guy going to the playoffs, and I have no problem with that. I think for at least this season and going forward, a guy that we didn't expect to be the one making the jump forward did, and credit to him, he's played very well.
Yeah, he really has. And everyone, again, neither of us are junior hockey experts, but people have been excited about him coming up and spoke well of him.
They
and
did.
From what I've seen, everything has been justified because he's been very, very impressive.
And I like the way he's played. He's good, solid, dependable, and like you say, he made a mistake on Monday night, for sure, and a costly one. But I think you can afford rookie defensemen that every once in a while. And great beard. Let's not discount the beard.
That's part of it.
Is it?
Very small beard.
Okay, thank you for that insight. Question 7. Would you like to see the Habs make a play for either Joe Thornton or Patrick Marleau, possible available San Jose Sharks?
I think they're both fantastic players, and any team in the league would be, you know, an idiot not to welcome them aboard. They both have no move clauses.
Yeah.
Neither of them, especially Thornton, seem like the type of player who would really relish the thought of playing in a market like Montreal.
Definitely not.
Marleau maybe. For the right price.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a bit last week. I think the criticism of Thornton is somewhat overblown.
Yeah.
But you do get the impression he's a guy who's very happy putting up 90-point seasons in Northern California and going to the beach and having one beat writer who covers the team.
Yeah.
I do not think he would... I mean, they didn't get anything in return, but there's a reason he didn't really work out in Boston. So multiply that by 100, even at this point in his career. I don't think Joe Thornton in Montreal is a great fit, even though I think if you put Max Pacioretty on Joe Thornton's wing, Max Pacioretty is scoring 65 goals.
Yeah, that's where I find it hard to talk myself out of Joe Thornton, because he's so good.
I would love to see it. I just think he would veto it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I don't think you could make that. I don't think either's going to happen, obviously. This is pure us just talking because we got a podcast and it's the kind of thing people talk about. I would take Marleau over Thornton for the reasons you mentioned. I think the more likely of the two to happen would be Marleau.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Joe Thornton's the center Montreal's wanted forever.
Yep.
And just because of some...
Team's wanted forever.
Yeah, exactly. And not, you know, it's not as if Joe Thornton is one of these guys, well, he had the whole package. He had the size, he had the skill, he just couldn't put it together. Joe Thornton has put it together. I mean, he's been arguably, what, one of the 5 best players in the NHL for the past 20 years?
Yep.
He just hasn't managed to win, which I think that boils down to, is he a victim of circumstance in Boston and San Jose, or is he part of the problem? And I don't know. I don't know if there's any way to know. Besides putting him on a team that wins and realizing he's not part of the problem. But unless he does that, it's going to continue to be the question. It does seem ridiculous to me that somebody as talented as he is part of the problem.
No, I think he's an incredible player, a first ballot future Hall of Famer, an incredible talent. I would love to see him in Montreal. Any team would be lucky to have him. I think a smidge of the criticism seems to be warranted, but I also think that players have different personalities and we need to deal with that.
Yes, that is very true.
Okay, so he's not Mark Messier, he's not Jerome McGinley, he's not going to go in at halftime he's not going to go in at halftime and rally the troops, because that's not possible. He's not going to go in at intermission and throw shit across the room and deliver a fiery speech, but he's going to put up 95 points every season.
If that's not expected of him, what's the big deal? I find this to be the same thing that you run in with Phil Kessel. Why do guys who play well automatically have to be big leaders? Why can't you just do one? Nobody's got any problem with somebody being a shit player and a big leader. But if you're a great player, but leadership doesn't come naturally to you, people don't like that. Meanwhile, you can score 4 goals, but if you can give the big speech... Oh, you're very valuable. Come on.
I'll take the guy with 95 points who, you know, may not be a leader of men.
Who wouldn't? It doesn't make any sense.
Tons of people wouldn't.
I know, and that's what I don't understand. Like, you can find leadership in other places. It doesn't... I agree it's best when a player can both lead and then lead by example. That's your perfect scenario. You know, Jonathan Toews.
Yes.
But that's not everybody. And I don't think we should fault the guys who that isn't necessarily as much as we do and act like they're a cancer on the team half the time simply because they're good but don't necessarily show the leadership. Those two things don't have to go hand in hand, and they don't necessarily. It's weird to me that it makes you, you know, a pariah on the team if, A, you're not great with the media and don't love the media, in Phil Kessel's case, or B, aren't great at coming through the speech at the right time. play should do most of the talking, really. It's ridiculous that it doesn't.
Anyway, ideally, would you like to have both? Yes, I would rather have Jonathan Taves than Joe Thornton for that reason.
Yes.
But I would still rather have Joe Thornton than, I don't know, Patrick Elias, or someone who's pretty damn good and has won a couple of cups, but is not just the same caliber player.
Yep, I agree completely. So yeah, I'd like to see them both as a Hab. But I think the problem, especially, is that, you know, as much as I'm bitching about the perception right now, you can't change that. And if he came to Montreal and it was that, it probably wouldn't be a good environment. It would affect him. So I don't like the reality, but the reality is what it is. And that's, for some reason, everyone's perception is if you're good, you also have to be a great leader. And we've seen that happen in players in Montreal. Very talented, don't necessarily have whatever it is that we think, you know, makes them the next Jean Béliveau. And we hate them for that. All right.
Number 8, rank them worst to first in your Eastern Conference playoff teams as they currently stand.
All right, let's get out the old standings here. Take a look at the Eastern Conference. And of course, just as I try to do that, the damn thing doesn't want to load for me. All right. So obviously sitting at the top of the East, you got the Montreal Canadiens, 102 points. But 2 games in hand on New York Rangers, Tampa Bay in 3, Pittsburgh in 4, New York Islanders 5, Detroit 6, Washington 7, and Boston 8. Rarely, if ever, do they really end up finishing that way. I'm going to rank them Tampa Bay, and I would have said this before tonight, you can check my tweets because I made sure to put this on record. Tampa Bay number 1 in the East. I got the New York Rangers at number 2 in the East. Your Montreal Canadiens at number 3.
I agree with all of us so far, just in the interest of saving time.
Yep. I'm going to go with the New York Islanders in the 4 spot. Pittsburgh Penguins 5. 6, I got Washington. 7, I got Detroit. And until they show me something else, Boston is the 8. And if I was even including Ottawa and Florida, I'd probably rank Florida ahead of Ottawa right now, but let's just stick with the 8 that are in at the moment, because I think that'll be the same 8 when all's said and done.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I think that's how it happened as well. Did you have the Islanders ahead of Pittsburgh? Or other way?
I did. I had the Islanders ahead of Pittsburgh because I think they're a more complete team, and if I'm picking a goalie to rely on, I'm going to go with Halak over Fleury in the playoffs, you know, based on history.
I suppose Fleury's been good this year.
Fleury's been good plenty of times. He didn't blow it last year in the playoffs. He wasn't great either.
And that's what gives me a little bit of faith, but I just don't think that Pittsburgh team has enough depth.
They don't seem to.
And I also don't think they're particularly well coached.
They aren't. They used to have a good coach. He's gone now.
He used to, and they got rid of him for some asinine reason.
Pittsburgh's just been a non-story this season, haven't they?
I know. And if they go out in the first round or even the second round, which seems probable.
Don't you expect them to go out in the second round? Even the first, perhaps?
Yeah, you do, but
I mean, they might be facing the Islanders in the first round. Who are you betting on?
The Islanders, not by much, but the Islanders.
Yeah, same here.
But I think that the shakeup we've all been waiting for a couple of seasons now, I think that might finally happen this offseason if they bat out again.
They're not going to move Crosby, obviously, despite there being an article this week that suggested shifting him for the McDavid pick.
Fantastic clickbait.
Yeah, it's clickbait, and fine, good for it. It did its job, and people talked about it. But they might move Malkin.
They might.
I think it'd be crazy. I don't think Malkin's the issue, much as Crosby's not the issue. But it wouldn't surprise me if they move Malkin in the offseason.
It wouldn't shock me either if they had managed to get more. And I don't even think Jordan Staal's that great.
Me neither.
But his stock was high.
His stock was very high.
And they should have gotten a lot more for Jordan Staal than Brandon Sutter and whatever else they got. And they kind of whiffed on that, and that's a big part of their problem right now.
Sometimes it can be one move like that that just cripples you, and you see that in this case. I mean, saw in Montreal's case, the Scott Gomez deal set them back a lot, I think. Once in a while, these things, they can really destroy you. I'm not going to say Pittsburgh's destroyed, but if it ends up leading to you trading Malkin and you're not going to get, I'd be surprised, I guess, that you'd get anything back from Malkin that would truly replace him. Because what, I would suspect you'd be trading for young assets. And if you don't trade, you know, does that really help you for Pittsburgh at this point? But if you don't trade for young assets, then you're definitely taking 75 cents on the Evgeny Malkin dollar, aren't you?
Unless you trade him for Kessel and put Kessel in Sid's wing.
Straight up trade? Oof. I think you got to offer more than Kessel for Malkin.
I think you do too, but yeah, it's close at least. It's not.
That'd be interesting. I'd hate that. Gino in Toronto?
Kessel and Gardner?
I can just imagine Crosby and Kessel. Would he score 50, 60? Kessel, I'm talking about?
70.
I think that's fair. Maybe I think that's 75. Fair. I really think that could happen.
I'm not even exact. If he can turn Chris Kunitz into a 35 goal scorer or whatever.
Chris Kunitz scored a goal in the gold medal game. Let's not shit on Chris the Great Kunitz.
He'd be one of the five best pure goal scorers in the world on Sidney Crosby's wing.
It'd be something. I guess it would be something like that that you'd have to offer. Something intriguing enough to make them think about it.
And I think it needs to be, I mean, you said is it young guys and prospects, but like you said, I don't know what the point of that is.
Yeah, exactly. Pittsburgh is looking at a closing window, not, you know, it they're needs not to be building something.
It needs to be an elite winger that you can put on Crosby's wing right now and hope that your top line propels you to the cup.
And that doesn't happen too often, top line propelling you alone.
No, I don't think there's logic in the sense that you have this 1-2 punch at center. That, generally speaking, that works more than having just a great top line.
Yeah, it does. But you got to have more, you know, you got to give your center something.
Yes, you should give the best player in the world something better than least Stepniak and Chris Kunitz.
I think that's fair.
If they could have kept Hoxha.
Yeah, that was, that could have made a big difference for them, really, historically speaking.
They've been at least one more cup if Hoxha's on that team.
I think so, too. I mean, he's a fantastic player. He's the most underrated player. I say this quite often, but I think he's the most underrated player in the NHL.
Yep, I think that's fair.
All right, question number 9. Tell me you wouldn't want Jaromir Jagr on your team.
I will say no such thing.
I know you wouldn't. I know we talked about, at the deadline, like, probably overpaid for him in the case of the Panthers, but then you watch that game the other night, and then he's got two, whoever they were playing, against Ottawa the other night. You're thinking, Jesus, maybe this would have been the perfect guy to add to this team right now.
Well, he said he wants to play 7 more years.
So what, we get him for a season and a half still? Still got a shot at him?
So 7 more teams will get him for about a year each.
Panthers are thinking of locking him up. They like what he's done.
Yeah, I can't blame him.
No, me neither. Would you have traded that now? Whatever they dealt for him, a couple seconds and something else?
Probably not, no. Would I sign him? Would I overpay for him in free agency? Probably.
So you,
especially on a 1-year deal.
That's
but I
fair.
Think draft picks are too valuable.
All right, I think that's a decent argument. You don't think he could be the difference, though, right now? Team that can't score, he seems to have given complete life to this young line in Florida.
Maybe, but two second-round picks is a relatively steep price for a 20-goal scorer.
His age doesn't count as much as other people's does, but he is old as shit.
He is old as shit.
Oldest man in the NHL.
Man, it would be fun, though.
It would be. I mean, it'd be amazing. And he would make the Habs more lethal. It's not like it's just some idea of Jaromir Jagr. Yeah. Jaromir Jagr could still contribute. He is still contributing. But I agree with you. I think that trade was, it was a steep price. It was a decent price for Florida to make, but would probably be a pretty stupid price for the Canadians to have paid, when all's said and done. But you wouldn't have heard me complaining, to be honest.
He's running out of teams to play for, though. I do feel like it's going to happen in the next 7 years.
at some point. He could have gone back to Pittsburgh. That's what they should have done. Speaking of who the Penguins could have added, that would have been awesome. Oh, no, it was only a second and a third pick.
That makes a difference, actually.
It makes a big difference. Second and a third, and suddenly you got Jaromir Jagr up there on playing with Max Pacioretty and Thomas Plekanec.
It's not a bad first line.
Anyways, it didn't happen. But the question...
It'll happen next year or the year after, or maybe the year after that, though.
Well, he's signing with Florida. He'll be starting next season with Florida. We'll see where he goes at the deadline, obviously. But he will start next season as a Florida Panther. Yeah. I believe.
I believe as well.
Seems like... I mean, what old Russian doesn't want to just hang out in Florida at this point, really? No real pressure. Come on. That's all. He's not Russian. He's Czech. Whatever, they're all the same to me. Eastern Bloc, am I right? Question number 10. Is Galchenyuk's season a disappointment? There was talk of that last week.
I don't see how you can make that argument.
Plenty of people are.
That's fine, they're wrong.
21 years old, 20 goals.
20 goals is pretty good for a 21-year-old player.
Is it not? I think 20 goals, I mean... Used to be rare, not rare, I mean, we usually have one or two of them on the team a season, but 20 goals was a nice mark for anyone to reach, and for him to have reached it in such a disappointing season, what were we expecting? 26? He's supposed to be at 30 this year?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I guess so. I guess that's what people are saying.
I guess.
But he just turned 21. There's plenty of time for him to develop. Even if I expected more from him this season, I wouldn't call it a disappointment in terms of me starting to doubt what Alex Galchenyuk can become. I mean, look at that. Oh, he got robbed by pretty much the post on and a little bit of bad luck on an amazing move tonight that would have tied the game. He keeps coming closer and closer. And
yeah.
It'd be one thing if we were saying that, but the results were 11, 12 goals. But the results are 20 goals. I mean, if Lars Eller or David Dale score 20 goals, we're saying they have a hell of a season. Alex Galchenyuk, 20 is disappointing. He's only 21. It's only his third season in the NHL. He's continued to progress. I'm not disappointed by Alex Galchenyuk. 20 is nice.
I know there was the thought before the season that, you know, it's his third year, and historically speaking, a lot of players have had breakouts in their third year,
yes.
And maybe this would be his Tyler Seguin breakout year. And I think I floated that idea on the podcast. Like that would
Yeah, we did.
Nice. That would have been nice, and yeah, maybe I expected more of this season, but I don't think he's behind schedule. I mean, you look at a player like Anže Kopitar, who I think's, you know, best case, I think that's who Galchenyuk turns into.
Yeah.
Probably not as good defensively, but that caliber player. It took Kopitar quite a few years to turn into Anže Kopitar.
Oh, definitely.
He had a lot of really nice seasons, and he was always seen as an up-and-coming player, but it wasn't until he was, I don't know, 26, 27, 28 that he really turned into the guy he is now.
And this season's not over, so let's say Galchenyuk gets one more even. That's a 21-goal season. Next year he goes out, he's 22 years old when the season ends. He continues to improve on a steady rate. He's looking at 28, 29 next season. I mean, then he's in the 30 range. Once you're in the 30 range in the NHL, I mean, look at Max Pacioretty, fourth in the NHL right now at 37. 37's a lot. I'm not shitting on that, but... If you're flirting with 30, you're amongst the better goal scorers in the NHL. And here he is, 21, and he's got 20. That's not bad. I'm not going to complain about this season from Galchenyuk. And let's see what he does in the playoffs. He was the best player on the Habs in that playoff series against the New York Rangers last season.
Yeah, he was.
We shall see what's coming. All right, it's late. Move us ahead.
Number 11, what's next in Boston if they do miss the playoffs, which apparently neither of us think is going to happen, but nonetheless, a major shakeup or some fine-tuning?
I think the same will probably happen if they miss the playoffs or go out quickly in the first round.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know. Missing the playoffs is a lot more horrific than going out in the first round. If they miss the playoffs, you're going to see a major shakeup in terms of pretty decent shift in that Claude Julien will be fired, and I think a significant player will be traded. It might work out for them, because my big fear is they fire Claude Julien and hire Dan Bylsma.
I could see Julien getting booted.
I could see it.
And I could, honestly, if they're smart, which they are.
Yeah. Except for that Tyler Seguin thing.
Except for the Tyler Seguin thing. Maybe you sell Chara a year too early instead of a year too late.
That's the Belichick move. And that would be a smart move.
It would be. You don't think Edmonton would give up something nice for Zidane and Chara?
I think they would. Maybe you could trade for that Tyler Seguin kid.
And those two teams have been those two teams have been tied for a lot of rumors.
Yep.
Like, couldn't you see a Chara for Eberle type thing?
Yeah, that's exactly what I could see.
Lucic for Hall is the other thing that people keep throwing out there.
Oof, Edmonton would make that stupid move, wouldn't they? That would be horrible. Come on, that's stupid. That's stupid. But it's Edmonton.
Eberle for Chara, I could see that.
That I could really see happening.
I don't think Bergeron is going anywhere. I don't think Krejci is going anywhere. I don't think Rask is going anywhere.
No, I agree on all those counts.
And, man, I think Zdeno Chara is maybe the second best defenseman of my lifetime. But he's starting to slide. And like you said, that's the Belichick move. Sell him off this year instead of next year.
They know all about that. I'd make it. I'd make that move.
I could see that happening.
Just when you think they're done.
I know. God, if they get Taylor Hall.
They won't get Taylor. Like, no, it's not. It'll be Eberle for Char or something along those lines. I don't see them getting Hall. But like it would be just like them. That would be a very Bruins thing. Miss out on Sege, add Taylor Hall. End up with the Taylor Tyler thing in their favor almost. Who's going to be better? I mean, who knows? But better career at this point, Hall or Sege?
I'll go with Sege at this point.
I will as well.
That's the first time I've said that in a while, because for a long time I thought Hall was the better player. But
by quite a bit, too, in my case.
Yeah.
I thought Hall was going to turn out to be not leap and bound ahead of Sege, but I thought Hall was going to be the more elite of the two for sure.
Yeah, I didn't too. I mean, there's still time.
And you never know with that Edmonton stink.
Yeah, there's that.
That being said, it's not like the Dallas Stars are the greatest team in the world.
Not yet.
But they're far better than the Oilers, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, question 12. Going to the bottom of the barrel, were the Sabres fans wrong to cheer their team's loss to Phoenix the other night?
That's a little weird, isn't it?
You're Buffalo. What else? I mean, that's all you can hope for. Come on.
I know. I have no problem with tanking, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
It is the smart thing to do.
Yes.
I don't know if I could ever, and I'm sure it was somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but
it was very tongue-in-cheek. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if I could ever cheer my team's loss.
If Connor McDavid's the prize and you've been the Buffalo Sabres for as long as you have, I think you can. Yeah, I think you can.
I don't really give a shit. I'm not offended by it, but I'd have a hard time doing it as a fan, I think.
I think I could do it. I think I could see myself doing it. You know the frustration and anger with the team you would have? It would almost feel good in its own way that has nothing to do with Connor McDavid.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think a little bit of it is a fuck you, really, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess mostly just getting that out of your system is kind of, you actually get to cheer for these losses, which probably would feel good after, you know, having them break your heart for so long. The Leafs would, of course, if I was a Leafs fan right now and they had somehow managed to find their way below the Sabres, I'd be cheering for every loss very enthusiastically. Connor McDavid's a huge prize for a suffering fan base. I could see cheering for it. I'm not as offended as some out there were, but some people just really love to be offended by anything in the hockey world.
Yes.
So
yes, they absolutely do.
All right, so that wraps up the 12-pack. We're going to try and wrap up this podcast rather quickly here. Just taking a look at the schedule ahead, March. She is done for the Canadiens. We move into April. Just 5 games left on the regular season. Thursday, Friday, back-to-backs. One at home, hosting the Washington Capitals, which may very well be a first-round playoff preview. Good chance of that being the case. Alex Ovechkin, will he get 50 against Carey Price, if Price plays in that one? Friday, New Jersey Devils, 7 o'clock And that one's in Jersey. Monday night, Florida Panthers, if they're still relevant. Detroit on Thursday, the 9th of April. And then the Habs will finish the season against the Toronto Maple Leafs in Toronto on April 11th. This may be our last podcast of the regular season. What with Easter coming up, we'll see how that plays out. But more likely than not, we'll probably be podcasting again on like the 12th after that Leafs game to preview the playoffs for the Habs. That's what it looks like ahead. That will take us into our BFP, or as those of you who enjoy the vulgarity call it, the bold fucking prediction. Sean, what is your bold fucking prediction between now and the end of the season? Or, you know, for the playoffs and beyond.
Can I go even further beyond?
You can go as far beyond as you want, man. No limitations.
Roads? We're going to need roads. I did go back to the future for my BFP. It ties into an earlier conversation. I do not think Joe Thornton will be a San Jose Shark this time next year. I don't think he's coming to Montreal. I do think he's going to Brooklyn, however.
Nice.
How do you think Joe Thornton is the number two center for the Islanders?
I like that a lot. That makes a lot of sense to me.
That'd be kind of fantastic for everyone involved, wouldn't it?
I think so.
He doesn't have to be the face of the franchise.
Got good beard.
Number two center behind John Tavares.
Brings a nice beard into hipster territory.
Exactly. Yeah, he would enjoy Brooklyn.
I think he'd love Brooklyn.
He likes the Bay Area. I think he would enjoy Brooklyn.
Feel there's similarities between the two.
He's probably the 45th most high-profile athlete in the city now. He doesn't really have to deal with anything. He's playing on the second most popular hockey team in the city.
And if you've ever been to New York, or Brooklyn for that matter, you know no one cares if you whip your cock out. No one cares.
They maybe instantly become the best team in the East if that's their 1-2 punch at center.
That's very interesting. I like what you did there. Even though it flies directly in the face of my BFP from a few weeks ago when I said Joe Thornton will be a San Jose Shark next season.
Ooh, contradicting.
Very contradicting.
What happens when prophecies cloud? Can that be the title?
Of course it is. There's no other thing going to possibly be what happens when prophecies collide. It sounds like it should have been like a Styx album. Or maybe a Rush. Yeah, I could hear Geddy Lee singing that. What happens when prophecies collide? It's pretty good, Geddy Lee, and you all know it. Well, Geddy Lee's not good, so I hate Rush. All right, I'm going to say it, everybody. Rush sucks. Neil Peart can drum. Fine, Neil Peart can drum, I'll give you that. But Rush, they kind of suck.
Yeah, I can live without him.
That's good to know. My BFP, I'm also going beyond the end of the season. And it's, I tweeted it out before we did this podcast because I didn't want a Habs loss to the Lightning to make it seem as though I was getting extreme in the face of a loss. My bold fucking prediction was going to be this, whether the Canadiens destroyed the Lightning or not, and they did not. I think I really like, the more I've watched this Tampa Bay team this season, the more I like the way they're put together. Bishop is a little bit of an underrated goalie almost this season, though he might end up playing his way into a Vezina nomination before all said and done. The West is a little bit off this season compared to what we've seen in past seasons. I think the Tampa Bay Lightning are going to be your 2015 Stanley Cup champions.
I can see them winning the East. And that is bold because we're just assuming they're going to have to beat LA or Chicago. It could be anyone. It could be
St. Louis.
Or St. Louis, yeah. That's a good point. I could see it, though. That is a hell of a good team, and they're so well coached.
Very well coached. Got all the pieces you would really want. I mean, is Bishop Price? No, but he's the next step.
Yeah.
Hedman, hell of a defenseman. I mean, great decoy. And the forwards, the depth of scoring, you've got arguably the second greatest scorer in the world. Used to be the greatest, but Ovechkin has reclaimed that title in Stamkos. Tons of secondary scoring. Extremely well coached, and I think that was a big part of Montreal's loss, at least tonight, to Tampa Bay. Cooper just outcoached Terrier.
Yep.
And I think that's probably what would happen in a 7-game series with Tampa Bay. I think more than anything, and that being said, I think Tampa Bay has more talent. than Montreal. I think Cooper would just outcoach Therrien. And so it's in a year when, if it's not one of the obvious, somebody could come out of the East and get it. I think that team is going to be the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's my bold prediction this evening. I don't even know how bold it is. They went out west, and the Western teams were... I was watching on Hockey Central tonight. They were talking about it. The Western teams were very impressed by what they saw in Tampa Bay. It wasn't the normal teams that they're used to coming out of the East. It's a very complete team that is extremely fast, and yeah, they've got some holes, but not many. Far less than most of the teams, I'd say, in the league right now.
Yeah, they're a hell of a good team. I'll give it 15% because, yeah, they're a good team.
I'm going to put your...
They're fun to watch, by the way.
Very fun to watch. It's a shame that they're, like, you know, they're really what's standing, as far as Habs fans are concerned right now, the biggest thing standing between Montreal and perhaps some success this season is a potential second-round meeting with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think that's scaring a lot of people, and rightfully so. As you say there, if it wasn't for the fact that I really want them to fail for the sake of the Canadiens, they're a fun team to watch. They play really good hockey.
Yeah, they really do.
15%, that's certainly bold. Now, I would normally argue that your Thornton prediction's not that bold. And I said he would be a Shark. No, wait, actually, that just verifies. No, it's not that bold. It's bold saying he will be a Shark next season, as I did a few podcasts ago. At best, yours is 5% bold. I beat you this week on the bold fucking prediction.
Well done.
Thank you.
Fair is fair.
Did you do your homework this week? Do you have a narrative?
Sure did.
All right, Sean.
Strap yourself in.
Your column.
My column this week, by clinching a playoff spot so early, the Habs risk going into cruise control and will therefore struggle come playoff time when they take on either an Ottawa team or a Boston team that's been locked in for weeks.
Oh, boy. I like that one a lot. That
is an old libel. You can dust that off.
You can, yeah, that's very good. Excellent cliche. You just switch a few players' names on the team, copy-paste. You got your column done. Very well done. I like that a lot. I went with the old cliche of getting in someone's head, and I think Ben Bishop is in Carey Price's head. Price had no trouble sweeping the Tampa Bay Lightning without him. But he has not managed to beat Ben Bishop. Everyone else he's got, he doesn't. He's allowed, what, 4 goals tonight? He allowed, I don't know what it was. I know Tampa Bay wound up scoring 8 on the first match between these two this season.
Yeah, God, that's a bad one.
Ben Bishop, mind-fucking Carey Price.
That's another bad title.
No, but you know, we were just trying to keep it clean for the kids when they read it. That's my column. All right. And from that, we take it into the Marchand of the Week. I think you got a good one, right?
Yeah, 2, actually. One, Shane Doan, who somehow didn't get suspended for that hit on Chris Letang.
Well, he doesn't have a rep, so that's why wouldn't.
Man, we talk once in a while on this podcast about sneaky, dirty players.
Is Shane Doan sneaky?
I don't know.
I would just call him dirty.
I would too, but he does have a reputation of being like, I don't know, like just this gritty, hard-nosed, nice prairie boy. He is a dirty-ass player.
He's very dirty.
And he has been for a decade now.
Yep.
A good player, like a very good player. Not a Hall of Fame caliber player, but a really damn good player.
I bet he gets in the NHL Hall of Fame.
I don't know about that.
Well, they got to give the Coyotes somebody.
That's true. So Shane Doan for his career of headshots and dirty play is one of my Marchands of the Week.
Fair.
One this week. And I know it's not really good for him to bash hockey writers and that type of thing, but we're not professionals. We're not part of the fraternity, so I don't feel too bad going after this guy. Adam Proto and all his sanctimonious douchiness has been long overlooked in this category, and well deserving all the scorn that's been thrown his way, because man, does that guy ever get up on his fibers.
Tell the kids at home what got you riled up in particular.
Nothing really. He went off on the Hamburglar and how, you know, instead of throwing the Big Macs on the ice, everyone should just donate that money to the local food bank, which, listen, that's fine. It's a nice thought. It's a nice gesture, but he is... Can we have any fun?
Exactly.
Without Adam Proto getting up on him on pie guys and yelling at us all.
There's
a more sanctimonious hockey writer out there. I've yet to come across him.
Exactly. There's just so much. I'm not even. Let's not get into anything on this, but there's so much waste of stupid shit out there that would probably be much better spent on food banks. A few hamburgers being thrown on the ice. It's just people having some stupid fun. Sometimes you gotta let it happen. It's the same as in the ice bucket challenge when people are like, you know, there's people without drinking water. I know that. But we also let, you know, so much water. Anyways, before I go off on any tangents.
Every cent I spend on hockey should be going to a food bank.
Yes, exactly.
Every ticket I ever bought, every...
All the money I spend on...
Every sweater exactly. I ever bought, every penny of that should be going to a food bank. I get that.
Yes.
I like hockey because it's fun. And sometimes we need fun distractions without self-righteous hockey writers berating us all for it.
Well said. Well said. My Marchand this week is the truth. The truth is, the Tampa Bay Lightning, I think, are a better hockey team, perhaps considerably so, than the Montreal Canadiens. I hope I'm proven wrong on this in the playoffs, but I don't really see a way in which, besides Carey going even more insane than he is right now, stealing anything from the Lightning. It's what have they shown us? 40 good minutes all season against Tampa Bay, and that's only when Tampa Bay took the foot off the gas. Let's not forget that part.
Yeah.
The thing that really pissed me off the most this week was the truth that I don't think this team can beat the Lightning. Maybe the Lightning can get eliminated by somebody else. That can happen.
Yeah.
But if the expected of Montreal versus Tampa Bay second round happens, I'm hard-pressed to see a way for them to win it.
The new playoff structure makes it tough, too.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Past, there's a very good chance we would not have had to face Tampa Bay.
Yeah, for sure, but not anymore.
But unless Boston or Ottawa knocks them off or Detroit, that's who we're playing. At some point, we got to get by them.
Yep. All right, and from that bitterness into the highlight of the week, or three stars, what do you have?
I mean, clinching a playoff spot's pretty good, right?
That's a decent highlight.
I'll go with that.
And I will go with Galchenyuk and Eller's play this week. I said we need some secondary scoring. They've looked a little better if they can start putting it together. I think I talked about this right as the podcast ended last week. We need to see something from somebody. We've seen a little something from the two of them this week. We'll see what happens between now and the end of the season. And then it's playoffs. So that was my highlight, was particularly Eller's play in the first period against the Bolts. If he can bring that to the playoffs, okay, maybe we got something here.
Yeah, he looked really good.
That he did. On that note, because it's closing in on midnight for us, we'll get out of here. Thanks for listening. We may have one before the season finishes. If not, we will come back and do our playoff predictions. Habs are guaranteed in. I mean, we've known that for most of the season, but it's nice when it's official.
It is
nice when it's official. Feels comfortable talking about the next few weeks. What do we hope for in the six games to go? Help, that's all? I don't really care otherwise. That's all you got? I expected a response. Okay. On that note, we're out of here. I like to show our professionalism as we go. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time.